Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
This program was made possible by viewers like you. Thank you.
At IHM VCU, we've always been here for you. You are and always will be our top priority. We care about your financial health, and we are here. IHM VCU is a proud supporter of WQPT.
Public Affairs programming on WQPT is brought to you by the Singh Group at Merrill, serving the wealth management needs of clients in the region for over 35 years.
A political newcomer's bid for Rock Island mayor and a new resource for families to turn to for the early education of their children in the cities. On April 1st, Rock Island voters will head to the polls to cast their ballot in the race for mayor. Now, while Moline's mayor and East Moline's mayor are running unopposed, that's not the case in Rock Island. Incumbent Mayor Mike Tomes has a challenger, Ashley Harris, a veteran, a father, grandfather, UAW member, and Community Caring Conference neighborhood organizer. We talked to him about his priorities. Mr. Harris, welcome. It's so good of you to join us. Tell me a little bit about yourself and why you decided to run.
Well, nice to meet you, sir. Good morning, Quad Cities. My name is Ashley Harris. You know, I'm born and raised here in Rock Island. I went to school here. When I graduated from high school, I went off to the military, served 4 years, and then came back home. Ever since then, which has been, you know, some time ago, ever since then, I've been a union member, a union worker, for knocking on 22 years now. And, you know, what made me run is, you know, to give Rock Island the chance to be a city of opportunity, a vibrant city of opportunity. We have a lot of potential here. However, I think that we're stuck in a state of stagnation, and we need a leader to step up, you know, with a sense of urgency, you know, because we do have pressing issues here, a lot of possibilities, but some pressing issues. And it's going to take someone with a sense of urgency to address those. So that's what brings me here, sir.
What do you see as the biggest problem as you see it? I mean, Rock Island's always had a bit of an issue as far as collecting taxes. You don't have much of a retail base in Rock Island.
Yes.
And that's always been a key problem.
Well, you know, a lot of things. This is like an octopus. It has a lot of arms, a lot of tentacles, and also like an onion, a lot of layers to peel back. You know, one thing about Rock Island, it's not the main thing, but it affects all areas of Rock Island, is our perception. You know, how people perceive Rock Island, it affects our bottom line, you know, in a lot of different sectors. From developers wanting to come invest here, from people wanting to move here, from area employers bringing in talent. Hey, where would you like to live? You know, Rock Island is usually not at the top of the list. So when you think about things like that, we are at a disadvantage just off that alone.
Police, when you talk about perception, a lot of it also has to do with crime.
Absolutely, sir.
Or poverty. And when you talk about crime,
yes.
The police department had announced that last year violent crime was down, 7%, 9% in fact.
Mm-hmm.
That's significant. It may be real, but you're saying the perception's still there.
Yes. And even with those numbers, I want to be careful with that as a man of the people. Because I'm not going to be tied into those numbers that can be manipulated, if you will. Besides, 9% up or down, it's not a lot. You can only tell the difference on paper.
And the next year could go back up.
Yes. And the reason I'm not saying those numbers are good and bad, because just this year alone, we've had two deaths. So how can I be a man of the people saying anything good about those numbers when I'm still heartbroken over that? When we still have families in mourning, in devastation behind that. There's no way I can get in front of a camera in front of the city saying anything bad when we still have that. So when we can eliminate our violent crime, our gun violence, when we can eliminate the deaths of our citizens by crime, then I'll say good things about whatever number you have on there. But until then, you know, we still have work to do, sir.
And there's been a lot of work so far.
Yeah.
What do you see that needs to be done that hasn't been done already?
Well, as far as crime is concerned, you know, we can step more into proaction. You know, and what I mean by that, like, for instance, the GVI program that Rock Island has, the group violence intervention. You know, what they do is they take a proactive approach off of perceived history of the people involved. However, even besides the violent offenders or the reoffenders, I want to focus on the neighbors, the neighborhoods, because a lot of neighbors know about problem areas and problem houses. It may be you know, a lot of foot traffic at this particular house. Oh, that looks like a hot spot. Well, eventually that hot spot could potentially turn into other problems. People hanging around, drugs, violence, if you will. So when we encourage neighbors to be a good watchful eye, you know, there's a difference between snitching and telling. Big difference. You know, I'll explain that at another time. But when we get more neighbors involved into the proaction, then that will all in itself increase GVI, and we can bring down all crime.
When we think of progress, I think we sometimes think of brick and mortar. But you're saying the building of neighborhoods,
yes,
is even more important, which brings me to the West End revitalization.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because that is a multi-year plan.
Yeah.
And it's really starting as, we're not going to walk in with assumptions. We want to learn what's going on.
Yeah.
And then we want to build from the ground up.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. And the original mission for the West End Revitalization Project was to create an area to where people would want to move to,
mm-hmm.
to where people wouldn't want to move from, to where the home values there are increasing. Well, for that, you know, we don't have to waste a lot of time on the surveys and all the busy work that goes on with it. You know, I have patience, but then again, I don't. If, you know, the right people are involved, you know, I have absolute confidence that the right people are involved. But you know, we need to get more potent. We need to get more aggressive with our approach as far as that. You know, we're halfway through a 3-year project,
right,
with that. So to stick to the mission, sir, we need education training opportunities in that area. We need services in that area. You know, we cannot revitalize if we're still considered a desert. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it, as far as that, you know, we still have work. But like I said, you know, we need to bring employment opportunity, education opportunity, and, you know, mostly the neighborhood coming together, you know, to clean up the grounds, you know, area beautification, and all of that in itself will reduce crime as well.
We also have to increase the tax base, of course.
Yes, we do.
In a community like Rock Island.
Yes, we do.
Which does not have a very strong retail component to,
mm-hmm,
it, which has always been a bit of a detriment, and past city councils and mayors have all tried to do something.
Yes.
Whether it's Walmart that didn't work,
mm-hmm,
or whatever. Well, the latest, as you know, is that development that's over by Jumer's.
Yes.
It's a cannabis retail place, as well as a truck stop.
Sure.
They're moving forward with it. Some people don't like that because of the wetlands that they want better protected. How would you have gone about that particular issue?
Well, for one, I do agree, you know, with the development. I won't frown on any developer or any investment in the city. I'll never go against that. However, you know, with pertaining to the Eagles, I heard a lady speak at the city council meeting, and I believe she was from, don't quote me, but the Sierra Club, perhaps. And she was saying that the Eagles, people coming to see the Eagles, you know, it's a multi-million dollar a year industry, that this area gets money from that. And she was saying that's economic development. But I beg the question on how is Rock Island benefiting from that? Are all these people staying at hotels in Rock Island? Are all of these people getting gas and food in Rock Island? Or are they just coming to see the Eagles and then going off into the sunset of Davenport and Moline? So that's very important that we can identify if there is a way that we can get some true economic development from that. And also, I heard another gentleman speak on, he was saying that if we build the truck stop, if we build the dispensary, then there would be no way for us to have the Eagles there as well. Well, you know, I would like to have deeper conversations on that and to get a professional opinion. Now, I hate to sound like an engineer. However, if there's a way that we can kind of envelope that, protect that, or a way of creating a similar place, a similar nesting ground that's within that vicinity, pretty much moving the area slightly. I'm open to all discussion, because ultimately I would like a win-win situation out of this. If we can get economic development from both ends, I'm all for that. But right now, I just haven't been in the right conversations to really have a more educated opinion on that.
One other area that Rock Island really needs growth, of course, is housing as well. Mm-hmm. And the search for affordable housing is difficult in any community,
yeah.
Rock Island included. Do you have a solution? Obviously, nobody has a solution, but do you have a plan or an idea on how affordable housing could be improved in Rock Island?
Well, if we just focus on the principle of things, for one, we need to focus on our social infrastructure. A lot of things, when we focus on them, the principles, we don't have to worry about the other things. Like people with, for one, we need to increase our population here in Rock Island. We need to increase our population. So when we develop an industry hub for something, when people want to come here to work, then investors, developers, private citizens, they will work out the housing situation. You know, that's nothing that I need to take this with a grain of salt. It's nothing that I need to worry about right now, because when we stick to the more pressing principles, that will work itself out.
When you talk about the pressing principles, let's end it with that. What is your number one priority? What do you think is this first job one that you have to do?
Social infrastructure, identifying everything that makes a city attractive, our schools, our hospitals, safe neighborhoods. And just as important as with that is employers. We need employers here to the area. You know, we've just been deemed a port district this time last year, roughly. And that allows us opportunity. We need to strike while the iron is hot. You know, we need to take that momentum, and that can also help us develop Rock Island into a hub for something. Also, what I learned is this is a heavy union town. Just in Rock Island alone, we have a little over 10 locals, you know, from the trades. You know, we have local UAWs as well. We need to tap into that. You know, we need to identify how Rock Island could be attractive to a corporation that wants to increase their global footprint. You know, not to run on and on with this, but you know, John Deere's a great company, you know, in this area, our only Fortune 500 company. However, you know, they moved a little workaround. Manufacturing went down south. So they justified that as staying competitive, increasing their global footprint, you know, in the world's market. Well, I beg the question with them, union officials, and other stakeholders, how can Rock Island be attractive to companies and corporations like that? And I bring up again, with the Port District, you know, we have opportunity to grow off of that. So when we can develop a new identity, turn into a hub for something, for one, people will come. We'll have money here. Our residents will have money to invest in retail or any other mom and pop business that they want to start. And the housing market, whether it's affordable or market share, that the market will adjust for that. And right now, you know, I'm not focused on that because, like I said, we have more important things to worry about.
Our thanks to Rock Island mayoral candidate Ashley Harris. And earlier this month, we talked with incumbent Mayor Mike Tomes, and you can see that interview on our website at WQPT.org. Once again, the election, Tuesday, April 1st, the polls open at 6 in the morning. Western Illinois University Quad Cities has just taken a big step toward the further development of the WIU Bilingual Early Learning and Family Center. It could help meet a crucial need for the preschool needs of children, parents, and adults who want to go into that field as a career. We talked with Eduardo Perez, the new director of the WIU Center.
So you have a new name. It is the Western Illinois University Bilingual Early Learning and Family Center. Tell me about, because we have talked about this as generalities, and now it's really becoming a reality. How exciting is this right now?
It's very exciting to be able to be at this point of our journey as WIU, as the Quad Cities community, and to be about to open our doors for families and young children to have access to that so well-needed high-quality daycare and preschool programs.
And there's a big difference between early child care and preschool. It's different, and they're coming together at this location.
It is coming together because when we talk about early childhood education, we are talking about children who are from 6 months old through 5 years old. And then, so that's the ages that we are going to be serving. But early childhood education in a strict school district, that goes up to second grade. So from 0 through 8 years old, that's early childhood education. And to be able to have those different ages at our place, It will be great to have that vertically alignment, mm-hmm. so that when students are developing in one stage, we can continue fostering the second and the third and the following stage all the way, so that they are ready to attend kindergarten.
Well, there's two things I really want to get to. One is the educational aspect. The other one is the need for childcare. Mm-hmm. In the Quad Cities. And let's start with that. How will this center help the community?
In both aspects.
Well, as far as families.
As far as families. So we have learned through research that what the brain of young children are, you know, all the processes, all the developments that are happening, connecting, you know, making connections from areas of cognitive to linguistic to social emotional to physical, all of those things are happening within that period of time. So it is so critical to have programs that truly understand that process and to have that available for families who in many instances don't have access to paying an expensive daycare, for example. But yet they have the need to go to work and provide for their families. So having something like our center in a community offers that opportunity for parents and families to have a high quality program while they can go to work. For different reasons. We are at the heart of the Moline community, but also so integrated into the Quad Cities community, right? So that families from different areas, from different neighborhoods, as you know, I recently moved from Aurora to the Quad City, so every time I go out, I'm driving through different streets. It's like, oh, look at that building, oh, look at that house. But also knowing and learning all the different dynamics of all the different neighborhoods within the Quad Cities. So being right there in the Floreciente neighborhood gives us that reach to all of these different neighborhoods.
So what point are you at right now as far as the development? You've got a location. You just got approved, basically, as far as what, licensing? And so now it's the hiring process.
So we are in the process of hiring staff which is a very exciting process. We are meeting different individuals who are also passionate as we are, and learning from their philosophy and see how that aligns with our pedagogy, and so finding and selecting that team that will continue fostering this idea of serving families through childcare and preschool education.
And that leads me into the second part, and that's Western Illinois University's role right in this program, because WIU has been trying to train the next generation of early childhood educators, or daycare people, or anybody that can try to alleviate the great need there is for early childhood care. How does Western, how does that pipeline now work?
So Western has, it's a great channel, this metaphor of Catholic, right, to help individuals who are passionate about teaching young children and then connecting them to the different resources and places that they can have in order for them to apply what they have been learning through Western. So we have programs such as, you know, parent mentors that also, in a way, collects, identifies those individuals that can go through this pipeline, and then through the programs at Western, then connecting them to, for example, our center, they can continue developing those theories and strategies, continue seeing how research-based practices really happen in a classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Because it happened to me when I was finishing my program in early childhood education, where you read all of these theories, but what happens when you go into the classroom and you're in front of children? So I think Western is doing this great thing where it's not only about theory, but the actual practice.
Which is so critically important. How soon would it be that it's going to be fully up and running?
So it's going to be soon. In terms of a specific date, it's hard because, you know, we have different moving elements right now, like, for example, hiring. That we are, that once we have hired staff, we'll have a better idea on a specific date.
What about applications? Should families be looking at that right now? Because, I mean, you want to get in as soon as possible. Is now the time to start looking at that?
Yes, yeah, so we have a on our website a QR code where families can just go and fill out this interest form, and then from there, we'll, you know, we are at that point where we can start connecting with families.
Let's talk about early childhood education, which is an area of expertise for you as you've been studying. We know that the younger that a child gets involved either with other peers or in a classroom setting, the better it is.
Mm-hmm.
But those opportunities aren't always there, particularly for people who don't make a lot of money. As you said, there's some expensive places, and it's very easy to get into those. But for people that don't have a lot of money, it's very difficult, and they fall further behind.
Yes, that's the sad part of the story, right? Because when families don't have those type of resources and access to this type of education, because of that critical time, that critical period of developing, children are missing those opportunities to engage with other students, to develop oracy, to develop language, to develop social emotional skills, which are so important, because when we think about those skills, sometimes are not valued or seen by adults. But when we are able to connect that, those early years to adulthood, to careers and professions, then we see that what happened here now is affecting our workforce.
Mm-hmm.
So when we have programs that are doing problem solving, that are doing communicating in like our center in more than one language, and we welcome multilingual, multicultural settings, so students are used to engaging and working, collaborating with different types of people, so that is going to carry on all the way to adulthood when they are seeking for a job. And at the end, all of these efforts are going to pay off for our own benefit as a community. because at the end, you know, if we look 20 years from now, 25 years from now, we're gonna have individuals who are better prepared for the jobs of that time.
Plus also building stronger people, because they'll be more confident, they'll know, you know, to ask questions, how to learn, how to improve themselves, and to be more confident.
Definitely, I've seen it as a kindergarten teacher, which I was for about 8 years. I was able to, I work in a two-way immersion classroom. And what that means is that I had monolingual English students and monolingual Spanish students that would come into my classroom. Some of them didn't speak any Spanish, and some of them didn't speak any English. And then I had another group that were simultaneous bilingual, so they understood and spoke both languages. So all of this dynamic was seen through the lens of language acquisition and play-based instruction. And when students felt confident, they felt safe, they felt welcome, they just flourished. They use all the skills that you probably didn't see in a setting where it's, I don't know, more from a few decades ago, where it was students were not allowed to use their mother tongue or their home language, right? Or they were not able to play because it was school and it was more academic center. Well, through play, we do academics and we develop literacy, but from a different perspective. And because they feel confident on who they are, so they can bring up all of their skills, all of their strengths into this classroom.
So I want to get it right again, the WIU Bilingual Early Learning and Family Center.
Yes.
What do you hope that it accomplishes?
We are hoping to accomplish exactly that, as our pedagogy is rooted in theories as such as Reggio Emilia and Waldorf, which allows students to explore, to imagine, to think, to problem solve, to explore nature, to question, to inquire. If we're talking about goals of 1 year, goals of, you know, the next 6 months when students are in our classrooms, so that students can develop those skills that are gonna help them to the next stage of their development. But like I mentioned before, if we're thinking about the long run, We are doing something great. We're doing something that it's so important and so critical for our community, because we are developing, as I mentioned in another interview, we are shaping our community by doing this, right? We might have the next mayor of Moline. We have the future mathematicians. We have the future authors and writers and artists and firefighters. And how much we invest now is going to be how much we get in return 20, 25 years from now.
Our thanks to Eduardo Perez, the director of the Western Illinois University Bilingual Early Learning and Family Center in Moline. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.
IHMVCU, we've always been here for you. You are and always will be our top priority. We care about your financial health, and we are here. IHMVCU is a proud supporter of WQPT.
Public Affairs programming on WQPT is brought to you by the Singh Group at Merrill, serving the wealth management needs of clients in the region for over 35 years. This program was made possible by viewers like you. Thank you.